Warm welcome to our Sonntag podcast, Tierteet. I'm Susanne.
And I'm Ute.
And Ute is not with me today. Ute, you are on Bali and you are very close to Carol, our guest today, because Carol Theobald, is from Perth. Warm welcome, Carol.
Thank you very much, Suzanne. Thank you, Ute.
And Carol and Ute, it's in the afternoon at your part of the world, and it's in the morning here in Aurich. But I'm very happy to talk to you. And Carol, you gave us some information about yourself. You are born in Scotland and you live in Perth now, and you had a lot of interesting experiences around in your life. And I really loved your description. I'm a peace-loving citizen of planet Earth. And this is maybe why you are the leader of the working group Zonta Says Now, a quite new project in Zonta. And we like to talk about that with you today. But you have also gave us some other hints which interested us. Maybe that in Indonesia you experienced gender equality in working. And I think we can focus on these two topics. But first of all, I would like you to introduce yourself and to tell us a bit, why did you move from Scotland to Perth and what happened in between?
All right. Well, I grew up in a military family and I was born in Scotland. And then we moved to Malta, lived there for a few years. And then we were posted back to England and lived in various parts of England. And then we lived in Hong Kong for a couple of years during the Cultural Revolution. And then we were posted back to England. And then I met my husband in England, and we came and lived in Australia. So that's basically what happened. So it was really because my father was in the military and we were posted around the world. So I went to many schools and I was often one school uniform behind. So, you know, it was they always knew who the new girl was, you know, so it was an interesting upbringing. But I saw lots of different experiences growing up. When you saw, you know, people who were poor, people from different cultures, and you really connected with your own privilege. You know, you soon realized how lucky we are to have so much when so many have so little.
And I think with another experience in working, you told us that you, as a working woman, you experienced like sexual assault in the workplace, bullying, exclusion. And this, in a way, made you come to Zonta or made you join Zonta?
Yes, I think they all influenced my decision. I mean, the things that drew me to Zonta were, number one, the word international, because living around the world, I care for people wherever they live in the world. So the international connectedness was always a big thing for me. I grew up on military bases where it was mostly men. There were no women in the military on the bases where I grew up. It was all men. So I grew up in a man's world. You know, I had to give my father's identification number to see a doctor or get a book out of the library, all of these sorts of things. So, you know, I was I worked in industries where I was often the first woman in working in that role. One of my first jobs, I was working as a trainee chemist with the Water Authority, and I was the first woman to be employed in this role. So I used to go around all the sewage works and also check the sewage pipes to make sure they were safe for the men to work in. So it was just an amazing role. And so in that role, it was interesting because men did not know what to do with you. There were no toilets for the women on the sewage work sites, you know, this sort of thing, you know. And so you just had to work around things, you know, you just had to, none of the uniforms fitted you. So you always had to wear your lab coats. You had to take home and sew the sleeves because they're all too big. Your boiler suits were going down the sewers, were too big. So you always had to roll up the sleeves and, you know, so it was, I grew up in that situation.
Oh,
you know,
I didn't
my first
think
work.
about this. This
yeah,
sort
so
of
so it was just different, you know. And then I worked in when I came to Australia. One of my first jobs, because it's always hard getting started in a new country, I ran a service station where I was a one-person gas bar filling up petrol for cars, you know. And so I used to run the accounts and I used to jumpstart cars in the forecourt, you know, get them going with two electric wires with the batteries. And that's where I learned about the Australian culture, you know, because people would come into the shop to buy things and they would want to get directions to places. I only did it for a few months, but it was a good introduction, you know, to how people operate. And then I've done all sorts of things. I mean, I was one among the first 20 female environmental health officers to be trained in Western Australia. So an environmental health officer is like a health inspector, you know, where you go and make sure that, you know, the food is safe, the buildings are safe for people to live in. It's all about how people work with their environment, how your impact on environment. So in those days, it was, you know, looking out for illegal fires, you know, in the metropolitan area, checking the safety of restaurants and factories and checking swimming pools to make sure they were safe for people to swim in and all of those sorts of things, what I did. I was also a trained meat inspector, so I spent time working in the abattoirs. So I'm very good around animals. I know all the bits of an animal. So I had lots of different experiences in my early career.
And you said that working in Indonesia, you experienced gender equality. Can you give us some examples? What made the difference in Indonesia? What did you do there and what made the difference?
Well, at the time, I was working in food safety with the Department of Health in Western Australia. And I was deputy in charge of food safety in the state. So I left there and set up my own food safety consultancy. And I was asked by a friend to go to Indonesia to help them strengthen their food safety. So this meant training the Indonesian food inspectors and putting in place an integrated food safety system. And when I went there, the first time I went with three men from Australia. And I thought, okay, Carol, you're going to a Muslim country. Be prepared to walk three steps behind the men and be ignored, okay? Because that was my listening for a Muslim culture. Well, when we got to Indonesia, the factories that we went to audit them for food safety were run by women, owned by women, and the men were ignored. It was amazing. The men on my team said to me, Carol, we've landed in planet Venus, because they were ignored totally. I mean, I was able, because I'm quite short, I was able to look everybody in the eye. In Australia, I look at men's armpits because they're all so tall, you know. But in Indonesia, I could talk to people eye to eye, face to face. And in Indonesia, they don't have a social security system. Okay, so what happens is that everyone who earns a living basically has to employ as many people as they can. It's an obligation, a social obligation. So when women work their way up the ladder of their career, they employ a nanny, they employ a driver, they employ a cook or a gardener as they work further up. And so as a result, where I was working at Badan Pom, Badan Panguwaso, Badan Makanan, which was their Food and Drug Administration, they had a daycare centre on site. Mm-hmm. So as the women could actually drop their children and they could pop down and just check on them. You know, these basic
that
things.
How long was that ago?
I worked there from 2000 to 2010. Okay,
wow.
So I was going backwards and forwards from Perth, you know, the whole time. I'd go for three or four missions each year for up to 2 months at a time. And we had to build our program. So it was like Lego bricks. Do this bit, and then build on it the next time we went. So as we could, and eventually we trained, I think between the teams, we trained about 1,500 food inspectors, 15,000 food inspectors, 100,000 agricultural extension officers, and reached 250,000 businesses. So I worked in about 13 provinces across Indonesia. It was an absolute privilege. In Australia, I'd be on national food safety committees, and I'd be the only woman. You go to Indonesia, and it's half and half. Half men, half women. Gender was not an issue. It was just, it was just so liberating.
That's interesting, because we just talked to Christine Dersch, the new director, and she told us that in Asia, Zonta is really expanding because this topic of gender equality is so important, and they feel like they really have to work on it. So this is sort of another perspective on it.
Exactly. But Indonesia was such a surprise for me. It was such a surprise. I learned so much, through working there. And I was embedded within the government. So the only Caucasian face I would see in a day would be my own in a mirror, you know. Uh-huh. And it was just, I'd work in these amazing, huge factories and small factories all over the country. It was an absolute privilege. Just loved the place. Yeah,
very good. Interesting though, maybe we talk a bit about Zonta Says No, because I think we don't know much about it, and maybe explain it a bit, and also how we can take action. What are you doing in your working group? We are really interested in that.
Well, Zonta Says Now started when I was working with the Department of Transport in Western Australia. My job was to bring people together on a new program to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the transport sector. Mm-hmm. I had to do research in the area because I'd not worked in the area before, and I did a lot of reading about the social impacts of climate change because they impact on transport. And anyway, I came across this book called The Future We Choose by Christiana Figueres and Tom Rivett-Carnac. And in it, there was this little chapter that explained how women and girls were disproportionately impacted by climate change and how women were the key to a sustainable future. And when I read this chapter, I read it again, and I thought, and I read it again. And it was a moment where I felt this wash come over me of enlightenment, of thinking, my goodness, I've been in Zonta for 20 years and I did not know this. I did not know that climate change was such a threat to women and girls. Every advance we've made with Zonta can be undone in a generation with climate change. I just could not believe it. So why is it so? Okay. You think about it. Gender inequality means that on the very simplest level, women have had a lifetime of a gender pay gap. So we spend our lives working and we end up with far less money than men. All right. You've had often you're working in part-time jobs. You're working in jobs which are casual or informal work. You've got childcare responsibilities, elder care responsibilities, all of these things in the economic realm. When there's a flood or a fire, and you lose your home, you've got no savings to draw on. You know, you don't have the bounce. You do not have the financial bounce to get your life back on track. So there's the financial side. There's also the physical side. Two numbers. I'm going to give you two numbers here, all right? Don't often go into numbers, but these ones really hit me. One study I read found that in some countries, especially in Southeast Asia, 1 degree increase in annual average temperature related to a 5% increase in violence against women.
Oh, wow. Why is that?
Another one. Why is that? There's a number of reasons for it. Often they come down to stress, and you end up with more fighting going on in the household. You find that when you get droughts and things, for example, people argue about money. They can't get food. Food prices are high. They argue, and you get far more arguments in the household. This also happens with any in Australia. We actually have a government department called Gender Disaster Australia, because they recognise the problems when you have a flood or a fire or any major catastrophe, that violence against women goes through the roof. Okay, our shelters during COVID were overflowing. When you get social disruption, you get more violence against women. Okay,
that's very interesting. You're
another that, one. This one, the next one will get you. But another study with UNICEF pointed out that for every 10% increase or decrease in rainfall, in average annual rainfall, in some countries equated to a 1% rise in child marriage.
Oh, wow.
So if you have a 20% increase in your annual average rainfall, that's a 2% increase in child marriage. A 40% decrease in rainfall is a 4% increase in child marriage. So all those countries that we're trying to end child marriage in, climate change is undoing the work that has been done over the last few decades. In a moment, because what happens is that families lose everything in a flood or a drought, and the only assets they have left to sell are their daughters. And they sell their daughters to feed the rest of the family. It is just heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. And when we talk about Zonta Says Now, I usually use five women to describe the problem. I talk about Dabor, who's 9, lives in drought-ridden Sudan. She has to walk further each day for water, so she has no time to go to school anymore. Ayan in Mozambique, 11, frightened because she's being sold into marriage because her family lost everything in the flood. In Canada, you have Judith, who's 42, and her daughter Claire, who's 7. Judith has casual work. When the wildfire smoke came through, it triggered her daughter's asthma. So she had to stop work to look after her daughter. She has a casual job. She doesn't get paid for the days that she's at home, and she's frightened that she'll lose her job. This is a reality for so many women around the world. You have Maria in Australia. She's 79 with a heart condition. When we get extreme heat, she has to go to the local library to cool down because she cannot afford air conditioning in her home. She lives in a rented accommodation. Because of a lifetime of the gender pay gap, she's living on a very low income, and she can't afford to get air conditioning. And she's worried with her heart condition. She has to walk through streets that have no trees, no shade, and it's 42 degrees. To get to the library to cool down. So she's worried about her health. You've got people like Ralia in Nigeria. She had a market stall. She has 3 children to support. The floods washed away the market stall, and she's worried about how she will feed her family. And then you've got closer to home in Germany. You've got the women there. You had 130 plus people were killed in floods in Germany a couple of years ago.
3 years ago.
And there are still women in Germany in temporary accommodation after those floods. So what Zonta Says Now does, we recognise that these women, life is hard. These are the victims of climate change. So we have to work to reduce emissions, to stop climate change getting worse, and close the gender gaps.
Really interesting. And you explained it so lively and so that, I mean, it doesn't stay just a word like climate change. You really showed what impact it made. What I have two things. Uta.
Yeah, I just want to ask, because if you think about climate change, it's like you especially think about developing countries. But now you had, you just told us
it's
about
everywhere.
People in really every country, like in Germany as well. So yeah. This is very impressive to hear, because we don't think about it. We think about migration And that, of course, affects women and increases risks of violence. But like what you are telling us now is like, yeah, it's everywhere in the world. It's not only developing countries. It's really very impressive.
I mean, Zonta says now seeks climate justice for women and girls. Climate justice puts human rights at the core of any solution about climate. All right, we're looking at the people-centered climate response. And so what we're looking at, we want to make sure that women and girls can prevent, respond to, prepare for, and recover from the impacts of climate change on the same basis as men. So we have just as many women as men around the decision tables that are making the decisions of the future. I mean, it's been well shown that when you have far more women around the boardroom tables and in parliament, you get long-term decisions are made, not short-term next elections, but long-term for the next generation decisions. Because women think of others before themselves quite often. We're trained to do that, whether it's for our children or our parents or whatever. And so when you get that, see the world through that lens, that community lens, you get different outcomes. Mm. So it's more women in leadership, tick, you know, that's where we can make a huge difference. We want to make sure that women have got the knowledge, you know about the links between gender inequality and rising social disruption caused by the impacts of climate change. It's the social disruption that triggers everything. Okay, when men and women lose their livelihoods and their homes and have to rebuild their lives, what have they got to help them do that? And that's where Zonta can come in. So that's where Zonta says now is based. That's the heart of it. That's where we're coming from. We want to improve the lives of women and girls around the world so that they can stand a chance of facing the threats from climate change.
Absolutely. So they have more access to resources as like land, credit, education, everything.
Exactly. Yeah. They reckon something like 80% of the smallest farm landholders are women. And they reckon that if women had the same access to loans and to credit, that they would be able to buy the fertilizers and the equipment so as they can get more, as just as much from the land as men can. I mean, there's so many countries, women can't open a bank account. They can't sign a contract. They can't get a loan. It's horrendous. I mean, when I first started out, I always had to get a man's signature to get a loan on any form, you know. And that's what the reality is still there for in so many countries. It's just heartbreaking. Around the world internationally, less than 25% of, or about around 25% of politicians are women, okay? And less than 30% are women around the tables making the decisions on sustainability and climate change, the climate negotiators. And then we talk about gender equality. So what's the men's problem? The men's problem is suicide. We expect them to be heroes. We expect them to, be the breadwinners and do everything for their families. And sometimes it's not possible for them to do so. And so 75% of suicides, deaths from suicide, are males. And so we have to sort of turn the tables on this. So as men and women can walk side by side on this, the biggest challenge that humanity has to face. You know, we can't afford we cannot afford to be divided.
We have to be united. It's a waste to lose the potential of women and to put it all on men's burden.
Mm. Exactly.
And it only works hand in hand. Yeah. I think that's what everybody has to see. It just works hand in hand. Nobody can change it. Not only the women and neither only the men. It's just.
We need every brain on the planet working towards this, finding solutions. You know, every brain is valued. Regardless of the body it's in, every brain is valued. And That's what we've got to work for. And Inzonta says now we work in five areas. We work to raise awareness, hold governments to account so as they meet their obligations under the Paris Agreement. We want to educate women and girls so as they understand more about the science and so they can be part of the solutions. We want full economic opportunities for women so as they can actually get that bounce, they can bounce back after they've had a problem from a disaster. We want to make sure we have equal voices by men and women around decision-making tables, and also that women are, when we're preparing for disasters, that we're preparing for women's needs appropriately. So in the last biennium, we looked at disaster preparedness and raising awareness. This biennium, we're looking at economic opportunity and women round decision-making tables. So we're already working with the working group as to how we can break this down into tasks that can be done individually or by Zonchans in a club or a district or internationally. And what's also good this biennium is that the Zonta Says Now working group is working really closely with the Zonta Says No working group and also all the advocacy committees, so as we can integrate our responses, so as we can actually make a bigger difference. So
that
exciting.
Was really, really interesting, Carol, and I'm really inspired to tell this in the club and to explain it a bit more. That was really, really good, and I wish you all the best of luck, and maybe we can have a podcast again and talk about specific actions you are starting. Thank you very, very much, Carol.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, and we can have so much fun with Zonta Says Now, because the mission is just what a joyful world it will be if we have a sustainable world, and we can create that by working together. So thank you so much for the opportunity, Suzanne and Uta. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you very much. And bye-bye to the other end of the world.
Bye-bye.